And we'll talk curses next with Rosemary Ellen Guiley on Coast to Coast AM. Let's talk about casting spells in general, first of all, Rosemary. Then we'll get into curses and things through dreams. But the people who practice casting spells, the witches, but people can do it too, can't they?
Anybody can learn how to spell cast. And some people are taught those in family arts that are passed on down through generations. There are plenty of instruction books that people can consult. There are individuals who can be consulted to teach spell casting. I think the ability to effect a spell depends a lot on an individual, the individual's ability to harness this inner power and align it with other forces out in the natural world and in the higher planes. Some people seem to have more of a natural aptitude than others. You can easily say that some magicians and witches really are born rather than made and seem to have a superior ability, just like there are people who are natural psychics with exceptional ability. But anyone can learn to develop their psychic ability.
And casting a spell, though, doesn't necessarily mean you have to go get the little book on spells and conjure things up. You can do it just by concentration, can't you?
Absolutely, George. And in fact, I think the best spellcasters are individuals who develop their own systems. They don't really follow recipes and books. They have learned how to marshal these forces on their own, in their own unique ways, in ways that work for them. And I've certainly experienced that in terms of energy healing. I did learn systems of energy healing, but ultimately when I started practicing on my own, I developed my own system that really worked for me, something that I was intuitively guided to do because of the results I got. And I think it's that way with magic, that it's very unique to individuals. And maybe one reason why books of recipes of spells don't really work for the masses, because they've worked for one individual or a group of individuals, but not necessarily for everyone.
Curses through dreams. Can you do it?
I think you can. I got interested in the paranormal through dreams, when I was a teenager. And the dreams are an incredible medium for all sorts of things, for astral travel, for looking into the future, for meeting entities, for meeting the gods, so to speak, even the dead. And I think that the medium of dreams provides a way to access people, especially through sleeping consciousness, when we are literally more vulnerable. There are practices of what's called dream sending, where you would literally cast a spell into the dream world so that it is more easily received or better, imbued into another person while their waking consciousness defenses are down.
And it's almost as if it finds that other individual out there. I don't know how it searches, but it does, doesn't it?
Well, you direct it through intention, and that can be done in a number of ways. You can do very vivid visualization. Some people do like the sympathetic magic connection, where you might own something belonging to that individual, and having that in your possession strengthens the energetic connection between you and the other person. But you can do it simply through intense visualization, and then by projecting an energy of a spell outward toward that individual.
And again, the spell, the curse, and even in the dream state, could be a good thing. Could be a relationship. Could be you want a job. Could be a concentration on anything positive, don't you think?
Well, absolutely. And if you want to look at it from the broadest possible perspective, intention setting in incubated dreams, which is a modern term for this, does have a wide range of applications and certainly can be used for positive as well. There are ancient formulas for dream sending. We know that a lot of different cultures practiced it as part of their magical art. And today, if a modern person goes to bed and sets an intention to accomplish something in a dream, that's technically a form of dream magic.
Sure.
Doesn't necessarily have to involve a curse or something negative. However, could you force somebody to do something against their will? For example,
even if it's a positive thing, okay?
Even if it's a positive thing, but let's say, for example, that you'd really like to develop a love relationship with someone. That's a very common form of magic, and that goes back in ancient times.
Who doesn't even notice you, let's say.
Exactly. Right. Who doesn't notice you. Can you force them through a magical spell to become bewitched by you or enamored of you and enter into a relationship? I don't think that we're going to influence other people to do things that they wouldn't ordinarily be inclined to do. In that regard, I think magic might be more of a facilitator rather than something that forces something on an individual. There are, of course, differing opinions on this, and technically, could someone, you know, have better magical mojo to force something? Well, possibly, but would it hold very well? I tend not to think so.
I agree with you, Rosemary. I think people who have these abilities can make things happen for themselves, but I think something else takes over. Fate probably, let's say, gets the relationship going, but it's got to work out, it's got to be there, or it'll fizzle and it goes away. So I think on one hand, the individual who even, let's say, wants the good job, if he or she is not properly trained in it or good at what they do, they may get that job, but they may not hold on to it. So I think it happens in two different facets. One is, if you're very strong at this and you've got the ability to learn and how to do this, whether it's a dream state or with consciousness, you might get it done, but you may not get it complete. Do you think that makes sense?
It makes total sense to me, George. It may not be complete, or it may come about in an unexpected way, you know, kind of, I would say, almost a twisted way, that it sort of comes true, but not how you originally envisioned it, and it's, you know, not what you wanted.
I have found, personally, to just let it happen. You know, you get it out in there, wherever it goes, whether we call it the ether or wherever. Just let it go, and it works for you. The more you concentrate on it, it seems like you put up blocks and it doesn't happen.
Well, who knows what all the forces in motion are at play in these situations, too. And as you mentioned, there's a fate or a destiny. There are the intentions and activities of a lot of other people involved in any given situation. So we're dealing with a lot of unknown forces in motion, which have various levels of their own powers, too. And I've always thought that the most effective magic that you can put into effect in your life is oriented toward the highest good, the highest good of a desired outcome, and then how that comes about is in your best interest, rather than trying to force a lot of things to fall into place, which may not be appropriate for your highest good.
The negativity that some people surround themselves with, and they send out these curses, doesn't it come back to bite them?
I do believe that, George. I believe that whatever we put out, whether it's for ill intent or good intent, does come back on us in some form or another, sometimes in what you would call instant karma. And other times it's a while before it comes back out. But I think that there's a natural order and harmony to things that we're not meant to manipulate or monkey around with. And I think that we need to learn how to fit into the harmony and to maximize the harmony rather than trying to force things to our own narrower point of view.
So I guess you could say witchcraft is a form of meditation. It's a form of concentration, just probably practiced in a different way. Couldn't you?
It is, yes, because you do have to use your inner powers, your own psychic powers, your ability to visualize, for example, and to project energy out. I think that the earliest forms of witchcraft and magic were really oriented towards survival. You know, that's been the pressing human need. And the forces of the natural world were very formidable for ancient people. And I think a lot of the magic was directed to controlling the elements, for example, so that people prospered. They had food and shelter and water and all of the basics. And over time, as people got into more sophisticated societies, these magical powers were directed in other ways, manipulating other people on a more mundane level.
Witches who have tremendous power have gotten there how? How do they conjure themselves up?
I think that the most powerful magical people have an innate or inborn aptitude or ability for it.
Genetic?
I think it is genetic, passed on down through family lines, and we find these traditions in folklore around the world. It is possible to learn how to develop your own innate power. I think it's like psychic ability. Everybody has at least something that can be developed. So training has often taken place within the context of family traditions. But if you were an individual and you wanted to go out and see, well, how much could I develop this on my own? There are lots of organizations and individuals who could be consulted for that. Sometimes just taking rudimentary psychic training, for example, through psychic development classes or learning some sort of system where you learn how to control and marshal your own psychic abilities is a big step along the way to then learning the arts of magic.
You know, now those, a lot of witches get together in what is called covens. I remember when I was a kid reporter in Detroit, I would interview a witch around Halloween especially. Her name was Gundella. Isn't that a great name, by the way, for a witch?
I love it.
Gundella the witch, and she was in a coven too. What are covens? How do they work?
Well, covens are organizations of witches that they have different purposes. Some of them practice more magic than others, more spell casting. For some of them, it may be more of a worship circle or a combination of worship circle and magical art circle as well. The emphasis varies from coven to coven. Some of them are parts of traditions, that is, they align themselves with certain teachings within Wicca, just like there are denominations in Christianity. And others are very independent and autonomous. The odd thing about covens is that there really isn't much historical evidence that covens ever existed to any degree. They are mentioned in a few witchcraft trials during the Inquisition years, the big witch hunt years in Europe. But the idea that witches were organized from ancient times into sort of secret commando groups just has not held up historically. Most covens are small. Witchcraft is oriented around small groups of units rather than big organizations like churches, for example, or temples.
But they are, you're right, they are small, very private. One would be surprised at the kinds of people who are in there, sometimes pretty prominent people of a community, aren't they?
Well, absolutely. We find people of all walks of life, all educational levels and professional levels involved in Wicca and paganism. And in fact, paganism, of which Wicca is a part, is one of the fastest growing spiritual traditions, especially in the Western world. I think a lot of people are just disaffected by traditional religion. It doesn't answer their personal needs. It doesn't answer their spiritual needs. And the celebration and expression and emphasis on the positive rather than on the negative, the sin and the suffering and what's going to happen to you as a consequence of your ways, I think that's one of the key things that appeals to people. They're looking for ways to celebrate their connection to the divine rather than trying to avoid punishment from the divine.
What is the Book of Shadows?
A Book of Shadows is a coven's or pagan working units, basic book of rules and philosophy, organization and setup, how rituals are conducted, spell castings, esoteric folklore beliefs. The principles that they adhere to spiritually are found in the Book of Shadows. Now, whether or not these books also have historical lineage is, I think it's probably a pretty uneven history. I think that there were books in folk magic there by the time people could read and have books, there were little books of various recipes of sorts that got handed down through family lines. But the Wiccan Book of Shadows seems to be a fairly recent addition as the spiritual path has grown in the years since World War II. Traditionally, and when I say traditionally, I'm talking in a modern sense, it's a handwritten document that is given to an initiate. The initiate copies down the coven's book into their own individual book, and then they add their own things, like it could be a diary with dreams and visions in it, meaningful experiences, new rituals. Today, a lot of Books of Shadows are on computer discs.
I was mentioning the witch Gundella from Detroit. I used to remember back in the 70s, she would try to take a small group of people, her little coven, and go into cemeteries and do seances and things like that. And she'd always get chased out because she never had permission. And I always wondered, Rosemary, if she then performed curses on the people who threw her out. I never knew that. She was a friendly witch. So I don't think she'd try to hurt anybody. But if somebody does throw a curse on you, one, how do you know it? And two, how do you fight it off?
Sometimes it's hard to know. If people start having sudden runs of bad luck, negative things start happening that they can't explain. Now, everybody has runs of bad luck. It might be easy to blame curses on things that, you know, just happen in the world. The good, the bad, the ugly, so to speak.
I call it the cloud, the dark cloud over one's head.
Dark cloud. But quite often, people have been cursed can pinpoint some sort of onset. And around that onset is they've been in the wrong place, like a place where dark energy is supposed to reside, or they've crossed somebody who is known to have magical powers. And after that comes like these bad things that happen. And oftentimes the bad things start escalating in seriousness. So we find this in all cultures, that the traditions that these sorts of things can be blamed on the curse of a malevolent person. And there are many remedies for breaking those curses. Sometimes a curse comes along in an object. The object is magically imbued with this cursing energy through ritual and given as a gift to the victim. I find this in many cases, that cursed objects find their way into possessions of individuals and homes. And when those objects are removed or destroyed or nullified, then the cursing activity stops. There are ways to send curses back to individuals, too, through visualization, through your own magical mojo, so to speak, or with the help of someone who is skilled in this sort of practice as well.
All right, stay with us, Rosemary. We'll be back in a moment. I just may open up the phone lines a little earlier right now, too, because next hour we won't have nearly enough time to take in all the calls. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment with Rosemary Ellen Guiley, more chatting about witches, witchcraft, and Wicca, and you, perhaps your stories or questions, too. We're going to open up the phone lines a little earlier, so you'll have a ample set of time to talk with Rosemary Ellen Guiley. Back with her in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Do you just sometimes distinguish between what witches do and, and hauntings, Rosemary?
I don't quite understand what you're...
Well, I mean, do witches ever go to a place and try to haunt it? Not like a ghost would, but, have they been involved in things like that?
Well, we do find hauntings of accused witches, yes. Usually witches who are executed in a place. Their ghosts may linger. For example, some of the people who are executed in Salem, who are probably innocent of witchcraft, but were accused of witchcraft. They do haunt the area where they were hanging witches, or they haunt where the trials, interrogations took place, or sometimes even their own homes. And there are witches who haunt cemeteries if they've leveled curses. There's a cemetery in Cape Cod, for example, that supposedly has been, it's a burial ground where a witch who cursed the land is buried, and that's haunted. So we do find episodes of that around. Could a witch deliberately haunt a place? That's an interesting question, and maybe so. If you have the intention to linger around after death and haunt a particular location, you might be able to do that.
I wonder if they could do it while they're still alive, with whatever power they may have.
Well, through projection, yes. Through some sort of astral projection, for example, you could send your own double to a place. You could create a thought form to be anchored into a particular place. And these sorts of things are technically, magically capable of being done.
You write about mirrors in the book Witches, Witchcraft, and Wicca. Tell me about that.
Well, mirrors have a very dark history and occult lore, so to speak. They are believed to... excuse me.
Sure.
They are believed to be portals, entry points, where things like demons and ghosts of the dead and other entities can come through into our world. There's something very mysterious about mirrors that mediates these slippery entry points between dimensions. Dead people should not see their own reflection in a mirror. Old beliefs held that a person who died lingered around the body for at least a few days or until burial. And if they were around their corpse, which was usually laid out in a house, and saw their own reflection, it would be shocking and very confusing to them. They might not be able to make it to the afterlife. People have used mirrors to access other realities, to conjure entities into our reality. And I've had some very bizarre experiences with mirrors myself and shadow people, that when I've been using devices called the Frank's Box technology.
Oh, remember that when you were in the studio with us? Remember that?
Absolutely. For spirit communication, these devices that are intended for real-time two-way communication, they seem to attract shadow people. And I have had occasions where I've been in locations where there are mirrors in a place, and shadow people will start showing up in the mirrors.
Showing up in the mirrors?
Well, you can see the dark forms moving around in the mirrors. And then sometimes they start manifesting actually in the rooms themselves. Also, in esoteric lore and occult lore, where houses have negative haunting problems, mirrors are often seen to be at the focal point of where the problem is. For example, folklore holds that you should not have a mirror at the foot of your bed that faces in, or you should not be able to see yourself in a mirror while you are sleeping. I think this goes back to the ancient beliefs and knowledge that we're obviously more vulnerable when we sleep. And if the other world entities have greater access during this time, and mirrors are entryways for them to do that, then having mirrors that reflect your image in them while you are sleeping seems to be an easier way for them to have access. What we do know is that in negative hauntings, when such mirrors are removed from a bedroom or at least relocated, sometimes that alleviates the negative phenomena.
Okay, let's go to the phones. Jim, Seattle, Washington, first-time caller. Hey, Jim, go ahead.
Hey, thanks a lot, you guys. I'm very interested in this topic. I have one experience that happened to me that was very frightening about a year ago near Seattle here in Tacoma. I was at my cousin's house, and I was observing a lady in profile, and her left eye I was looking right at it. It flashed to black and kind of altered its shape or something very, you know, over the course of maybe one and a half seconds. And the hair, you know, everything went up on my neck, and I got very frightened, and I turned away from her, and they left shortly thereafter. And I don't know what to make of it. I get debunked if I brought it up at a couple places. A couple relatives believe me, but people shine it on. But I know I saw her change, and it really affected me. So I wonder what you think of that.
The ability to cast the evil eye is a very old and widespread phenomenon, and there are some individuals who are said to be born with this ability. That is to bring about bad things. It's spell casting through the eyes. And other people learn how to do it. And if you were able to observe circumstances for that, you might notice that there was something very unusual about somebody's eyes. I think that we intuitively react to something negative via the body, you know, like the hair going up. We just sort of know in our own gut that something isn't quite right. And so from that standpoint, maybe that's what you observed with someone who had this ability. I think that there are people who inadvertently cast the evil eye. They've got the ability to do it, and they're not really aware of it, but it happens. It's also called overlooking. And whenever this baleful glance falls on somebody, then bad things start to happen.
Okay, thanks, Rosemary. Next up, Brenda in Texas, east of the Rockies. Brenda.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi, Rosemary. I have a question to ask you regarding my aunt used to transfer herself from a location where she would sit and look at herself in the mirror and concentrate and picture herself in my aunt in Houston, Texas bedroom, and she would wake her up. She would be sleeping and she would wake her up and she would talk to her. And I have developed this intuitiveness, and with mirrors and things, I see the shadow people all the time in mirrors. I see ghosts in the mirrors. I want to know how I can develop this where I can transport myself.
Well, this would be a form of astral projection, projecting your double or your consciousness to a distant location. And some people do use mirrors as tools for this. You don't really need a mirror to be able to do this. There are lots of techniques for learning how to project yourself out. Astral body travel. I would say Astral Dynamics is probably one of the best books for learning these techniques, and I stress that this is not a magical sort of a textbook or approach to it, but it does have a lot of techniques in it for putting yourself in a different sort of traveling vehicle to a distant location.
Next up, let's go to Anna in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You're on with Rosemary Ellen Guiley. Anna, hi.
Hi. Good morning, George. Hi. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning.
Okay, I have a question. I know for a fact I was told that a witch had put a curse on me. This was like 99. Ever since the year 2000, I've had nothing but bad luck. I lost my fiance to cancer. I lost my own health. I've lost everything. I've lost my money. I've lost everything. And it just keeps getting, my health keeps getting worse. I'm only 41. Last year I was diagnosed with diverticulitis and cyst on my kidney, and they don't even know where that's going yet or anything. I have like four herniated discs in my back and neck and different things, and just bad things upon bad things keep happening. And I tried burning like black candles, somebody said, during the waning moon or something, and concentrate on that and, you know, getting the stuff off you and that. And that didn't seem to work, and I don't know what to do. Do you have any suggestions that maybe I could, you know, do that could help me?
There are a number of things that you could try, and there are no universal remedies that work in all situations. One would be to find someone who is perhaps an energy healer might be a good person, or someone who is skilled in some sort of esoteric or occult arts as well, to help shield you from the negative energy, or to at least project it back to the sender or out to a place where it can be nullified. And it may have to do with finding an Achilles heel. Some sort. Are you in contact with this person at all who you...
Oh, no. See, I wasn't even in contact with her. At the time, I was in contact with a friend of hers. Me and her friend was friends, and she was jealous of the guy that I was with. I never did nothing to this girl or anything. And then her friend told me that she had put a curse on me, and I thought it was just, you know, bullpucky or whatever. I said, oh, you know, that's a bunch of crap or whatever. I didn't think twice about it until things kept happening and happening and happening. I mean, I've even gone homeless and stuff, and I just don't know where it's going to end.
Well, sometimes also the knowledge or the idea that we've been cursed can add an awful lot of energy to the fulfillment of that. And it would be very good for you to try and get into a more positive frame of mind through practice of meditation and prayer every day and invoking spiritual help. I don't know if you're connected to the angelic realm or some sort of higher spiritual power that can envelop you in a protective armor, so to speak. And that could be very useful in just either slowing or stopping the momentum of this.
Can people turn it around and send it back to someone else? Not that you should, but can you? Rather than just stop it and fight it, send it on?
I think that it is possible to send things back. And people have gotten themselves into magical trouble that way by trying to cast negative spells or curses and then finding the energy directed back on themselves. I think that it's really better to send the energy somewhere where it doesn't do any harm to anything. And people have used, for example, angelic help to take that energy and then take it to a place of light where it's transformed, at least nullified or transformed into something of benevolent energy as well. And that's what my approach would be, rather than sending it back to someone, which kind of keeps a boomerang of negative energy going, it's better to try and break it and nullify it through a higher spiritual force or energy.
Okay, next up, let's go to Sharon, Boston, Massachusetts. Hey, Sharon.
Oh, hi, George. I am so thrilled and so appreciative that you took this call. It turns into pretty much it's a question for Rosemary in terms of maybe she could elaborate or identify the experience I had, the entity, but it was a shadow being, and this was years before I had even heard the term. And if I could just briefly give you a quick rundown on the experience, is that okay?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. Great, thanks. Well, it was 96, and I had a baby. He was just over a year old, and I'd had a wonderful evening out with friends, and when you're like us, those kind of, you know, things were few and far between. So I was really relaxed. I'm sleeping, and then I got up to take care of him, and it was about between 2 and 3 in the morning. Took care of him, put him back to sleep, and I was just looking out the front door. It was gorgeous. It was about a three-quarter moon. I think it was just beginning to wane, so, you know, almost full, but, you know, pretty light, orangey colored, and I'm looking out. And all of a sudden, my eye caught this movement, and I looked, and I was just in utter disbelief. And it was a black, totally black entity. It was about 4.5 to 5 feet tall, and it literally glided up the driveway, took a right up the stairs, curved around, and it glided exactly like Sandy Duncan. That's all I could, you know, compare it to when she was Peter Pan. Just glided, and all I could say as it hit the front door was, "Oh, God." And the thing passed through me, and it gave a shock up my spine like you couldn't believe. And so I was stunned just for a second, and then I turned around, and I went, you know, I followed it. It took a right, went through the living room, and it exited out the wall. So first was the physical experience I had as it went through me. The second thing was I have these incredibly, they're well-trained but very loyal German shepherds that never leave my side. Well, they bailed. They started whining, and they just disappeared. So, I was puzzled over it. I was wondering, I was going on with some, there were family issues where there's some people that were, you know, it's just been giving me, I guess you'd call it a hard time, you know, a lot of stuff. So that was in the periphery of my life. But at this moment in time, I mean, everything was calm, everything was positive. And then a couple years later, we redid the walls in this room. And I had two plaques on the wall. They're sort of like a plaster material. Anyway, I'm mailing them to you. I got the address. And the one where the being passed through turned black in the back of it. Not charred, because you can't rub it off, but totally black. And so between that physical object having been affected by it and my physical body, I'm wondering if Rosemary could maybe help me out. Did she think this was a djinn? Was it a shadow? Was it sent by someone else? Or was it just a fluke, you know, something that came through a portal? You know, but it definitely...
Gosh, well, let's find out. Rosemary, I'm not sure you can pinpoint exactly what it is.
Well, it does bear the characteristics of the shadow people phenomenon. It's a little shorter than the classic one, which is 6 to 7 feet tall. But people do have what I would call random experiences with these things, where they're drawn in for one reason or another. It could be place, it could be place and person, emotional tones, you know, state of consciousness at the time. I have collected some cases where these beings do pass through people, and what she's describing as the physical response is the same, this kind of shock wave. Sometimes there's a lot of cold energy, a lot of agitation that goes on, the animals reacting negatively, not even wanting to be around. There are lots of cases like this that are just sort of one-off. I think that these beings have certain portal entries, they get attracted to certain circumstances, they come in to do observation, do some reconnaissance, just take a look around. And that's exactly what this one might have been doing. I think that they'll take any opportunity that they can to manifest in this world. So whatever was going on at this particular time and place provided that opening. And yes, I'm increasingly thinking that the shadow people are... at least in many cases, are some kind of djinn coming into our world to figure out how to get back in it.
That's a very good rational explanation for them too, Rosemary. It makes a lot of sense.
It does. And in fact, when I started looking at the overall shadow person phenomenon from that standpoint, a lot of things about the shadow people started falling into place.
I'm glad we started phone calls a little earlier, Rosemary, because these lines are jammed. We'll be back in a moment with more of your calls and Rosemary Ellen Guiley. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM.